Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, part of the Bet the Board podcast network in conjunction with NASCAR. And the playoff field has officially been set. 10 races to crown a champion, and we'll be with you every single step of the way. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by esteemed racing analyst Chris Wormy. And Worm, I got to ask you right off the top. I know we're going to go through a little bit of a Daytona recap in stage one. Stage two, we'll talk about some of the betting optics and the opportunities that the playoffs present before we get into a full race breakdown in stage three. But you told our listeners last week on this very show that you weren't going to watch Daytona. Now, since the race got moved from Saturday night because of rain to breakfast NASCAR on Sunday, did you find yourself parked in front of the TV drinking a cup of coffee, eating an omelet, and watching these guys go out there banging around?
Nope. I didn't watch one lap. I can't, Todd. I have a problem. If I watch, then I bet. And I know I don't want to bet. And it was interesting because I went on and talked with some of those guys on Saturday night. Derek and those guys had like a live look-in. And I didn't even know who won the Xfinity race. I didn't know who qualified well in the Cups race. I knew nothing. I genuinely just excused myself from NASCAR for the entire weekend.
You know, it must be nice to be able, right in the thick of the playoff race, the final regular season situation. Here you are, a better in his own right who does exceptionally well, and you are the voice of reason on this very show that goes, you know what, I'm just going to remove myself. I'm going to spend quality time with my significant other. I'm going to play a round of golf with the boys, and I'm going to come on the show and pretend like I know what happened. So honestly, I applaud that. I applaud that more than anything else. And hey, you mentioned the Xfinity race. Jeremy Clements may have won it on the track, but it didn't exactly hold up in the court of NASCAR, so to speak, is he'll have to win another race to get himself into the playoffs. And if that's the case, he'll lose 10 points. But as we always do around these parts, we kind of insinuated the directions we were going to head. Want to remind all of our loyal listeners, whether it's the first time you're tuning in to Stay Green, knowing that we're in the heart of football season and there are other avenues to bet. Stage one is all about what we learned from the previous race and the kind of lessons that we can take away and apply going forward. Stage two, all about gambling and some of the technical aspects of betting auto sports, and specifically in this show about what the playoffs mean to your bankroll and how to try and find a little bit of advantage. And today, a deep dive for one of NASCAR's crown jewel in the Cookout Southern 500, or whatever exactly they're calling it. So let's start with Daytona. We won't spend a ton of time here, but I guess the first overarching question I have to ask you, did we learn anything at Daytona that could potentially be helpful for handicappers or fans alike when we eventually get to Talladega in the second phase of the playoff race?
Normally, I would say no. There's almost nothing you can take. However, I will say that I went back and watched the 14 or 15 minute replay that kind of recaps everything exciting that happened in the race, and I noticed that most of the issues that kind of jumbled up the field or most of the wrecks actually started kind of at the front of the pack. And I was always of the thought process where I thought if you were out front, maybe in the first two rows, that you were able to avoid a lot of the big one, you know, per se. But I think with these cars being so edgy and the amount you have to block in order to keep the lead, a lot of the issues started up front, which is just a catastrophe for the rest of the field that's flying around there at 100 and, you know, or 210 miles an hour. So I think that the only way to play it safe is to ride way in the back. And before, I thought you could be up front or you could be in the back, but anywhere in between would be terrible. Now I think you just gotta play it safe in the back. Now, how we can make money off of this is I think that depending on where guys are at in the playoffs, when it comes to points, when they get to Talladega, you might be able to find some value on guys to win stage one and two, knowing that some of the faster cars might just be hanging around in the back trying to avoid the big one. So I don't know if there's a a ton we can take away, but that's one thing where I actually might concentrate a little bit of time as we approach Talladega.
Yeah, just 10 cars actually finish on the lead lap in Sunday's race. 17 cars were actually running at the checkered flag. And you talk about the big one. I think 13 cars were caught in that melee. Unfortunately, Mother Nature played a little bit of a hand in what transpired there. The three, the primary beneficiary living a charmed existence, found his ability to slip right through. And it was Austin Dillon with the improbable victory, sealing that 16 spot in the playoffs. It came at the expense of the 19 of Martin Truex Jr., who I know both you and I bet at long shot odds once we found out late last week that Kurt Busch was going to forego his opportunity to kind of take the playoff waiver. And after a red flag period that lasted 3 hours, 19 minutes, and 57 seconds, Austin Dillon falls behind the 2022 Daytona winner in Austin Cindric, trailed him from the restart, and then basically decided, you know what, I need to punch my ticket to the postseason. I'm going to run right through the two. Got a little bit of an escort, a chaperone, call it what you will, from his RCR teammate in Tyler Reddick, and it was Austin Dillon getting in, but there was a big gambling storyline that unfolded. We'll get to that in a second, but the three car, he may be a true 16 seed, much like in the NCAA tournament. I'd be stunned if he finds his way into the second phase of the postseason.
Yeah, I think he's one of the guys that's first out. Without question, here's the deal. Austin Dillon, obviously very lucky to make it through the big one that took out, you know, half the field. But then from there, it wasn't like he even had to finish, really. I mean, he just had like a 2-inch putt that he had to tap in. Like once he kind of got Cindric loose, I mean, he had a buffer, and that buffer had to block like Cody Ware and Landon Castle, like, or BJ McLeod. I mean,
it was a who's who of NASCAR that was finishing in the top 10.
I mean, and then, you know what? That's got to make old Richard Childress happy with that old 8 car, because he just stood there and he blocked for his teammate. And I think that it'll be hard for old Richard to be upset with that 8 car moving forward.
Yeah, not just his teammate, but Richard Childress, for those folks that aren't familiar with NASCAR lineage, his grandson in Austin Dillon. So their family ties, their racing ties, and the three car with an improbable way to get into the playoffs. But you mentioned some of the cars that were running at the end. Cody Ware, David Ragan, BJ McLeod, Landon Castle, and the improbable parlay that cashes as a result of that. I'm sure a lot of NASCAR fans and sports bettors alike have seen it circulate throughout social media. We won't spend a lot of time on this because I don't see these as typically plus EV situations where you're going to be able to make money long term. But for that one fortunate individual who I know they interviewed on Motor Mouse and a couple other platforms, putting up $13.49 to make nearly seven figures. Worm, I've been grinding at this racket for a long time. My balance sheet isn't into the seven figure category for NASCAR just yet.
I mean, hey, he won. It's not something that I would have done, but I'm also, you know, I don't have two commas in my my career winnings quite yet. So, I mean, well done. I have to applaud him. You know, the interesting thing is, you know, they had that bet cashed when the caution came out for rain. So they had to wait 3.5 hours and not know whether they were going to be able to win. I mean, that is the most shocking part of this whole thing. I mean, I don't know what I would have done. What do you do for 3.5 hours? You're expecting that they're going to call the race, which, by the way, NASCAR 100% did the right thing in waiting it out and getting those final laps in. So I applaud them for that. But as someone that's holding on to $1 million ticket, I'm guessing life-changing money, that would have been a very interesting 3.5 hours.
I'm most likely drinking heavily, trying to get my... And I don't encourage binge drinking. Look, we know NASCAR has a very good relationship with most alcohol companies out there, so we don't encourage that kind of behavior. But I probably would have had quite a few adult beverages, might have tried to reach for other things to lower my heart rate, and a variety of other ways to kind of calm the nerves. But that is the definition of a sweat. And again, a hat tip to the anonymous individual that was able to cash that. What's an even better part of that story, the $13.49 was actually a free bet that they used and parlayed that into the kind of score that most bettors dream about in the grand scheme of things. Although you and I will continue to stick to hitting singles as we try our quest for 3,000 hits as it comes to NASCAR.
The Ichiro of sports bettors.
Exactly. Slap the ball the other way. Use some of that foot speed to leg it out. I mean, we're not up here with Barry Bonds using PEDs to try and hit 850 home runs or whatever the hell you end up, 762 or 52. Won't claim to be a baseball historian. Did want to ask, though, about the two drivers that going in were fighting for that last playoff spot, and Ryan Blaney and Martin Truex Jr. Ryan Blaney gets caught up in a little bit of a wreck that could have taken him out of the race early on. It did, in fact, eliminate Christopher Bell from the mix. He ends up advancing with a 3-point cushion clear of Martin Truex Jr., despite finishing more than a few laps off the pace. But the 19, he had a great car. He was up there in the running. I don't like to play Monday morning quarterback, but I have to ask, do you feel the 19 was a little bit too aggressive, knowing, all right, Blaney is buried in the field. I have the luxury of kind of taking this a little bit more cautiously early, knowing that, all right, I can flip it into high gear late if I have to win the race, thinking that an Austin Dillon or somebody else could steal that checkered flag.
Yeah, I think this is fog of war. I mean, it's really easy for us to sit here today and say, well, yeah, he shouldn't have been there. But I think in the moment, these guys are racers. And I think it'd be hard to just ride around back there. Plus, it doesn't guarantee your safety. It might be a little safer. But I think if you have a fast car and you can be out front, you know, I know that I changed my mind on this. But I don't know. I think... Man, I definitely agree with him when he I understand why he said, well, we shouldn't have been here. You know, he came over the radio instantly and said, like, I knew we shouldn't have been here. But
that's one thing I want to say when it comes to second guessing. Obviously, hey, look, you're an athlete. You're out there. You're paid to win a race the same way that if you're a professional football player or anything else, you're not going 65% because when you're not giving it your all, that's the likelihood of getting hurt. It was more his comments that I found interesting in the heat of the moment. So I just wanted to contextualize that. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, and then as far as Blaney, I mean, hey, well done to these teams. These were both these were beat up race cars, and these teams got them at least to meet minimum speed. Maybe a little bit of a gray area with Blaney, but definitely met minimum speed. And it's so fun to watch, you know, these guys really really grind it out in the playoffs. We've seen it a few times in the past, and I think that the element of the playoffs is just a little bit more exciting and kind of inspiring to see what some of these teams can do with some very damaged race cars.
I think the playoff mentality, and of course we'll get to that not only on this show, but the 9 shows leading up to the eventual handing out of a championship trophy in Phoenix in early November, I think it's one of the issues that you've highlighted a number of times, even as a sports bettor, specifically in NASCAR. If you can avoid the calamitous race, breaking even isn't the death knell or the worst case scenario, and I think a lot of those same philosophies have to apply to these drivers in the playoffs, that finishing 5th or 6th, hey, that keeps you right in the thick of things. Of course, there are those elimination races where some drivers have to win and get in, but it's avoiding those 31st place finishes where you wreck trying to be careless, that it's survive in advance, especially early on until we get to the final, say, 8 drivers and we know only 4 can move on to Phoenix.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point, and I actually have some notes on that for stage 2 because it does kind of affect things, you know, moving forward. But I'll tell you what, every chase driver or playoff driver should be sending Austin Dillon a Christmas card, because I can tell you right now, nobody wanted to see Martin Truex in that chase. So, you know, that would be the final takeaway is Austin Dillon. I mean, I don't think he's going to be super competitive in this, whereas if the 19 were there, there would be some guys that would definitely be looking over their shoulder, wondering where he's at every track in the playoffs.
There is no doubt about it. And we'll wave the green, white, checkered flag as we put a bow on stage 1 and a brief recap of Daytona and all the drama that we saw unfold before we knew the drivers that were able to move forward and will vie for the series championship. Before we get into stage 2, I want to remind all of you, our loyal listeners, you can follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wermy, ChrisWerme. You can follow me there as well. That's Todd Furman. And most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Also, shamelessly, want to promote our free football contest. So even if you're a NASCAR bettor and you're not betting college football or the NFL, bettheboardcontest.com. It's absolutely free to join. Some Bet the Board swag. You pick 5 NFL games a week against the spread, and you have a glorious trophy if you happen to emerge victorious atop the heap. Maybe something for us to think about for season 2 of Stay Green, where we'll have to come up with a fantasy game or a gambling handicap where maybe people can get the Chris Wermy annual trophy with your face they can prominently display on their mantle.
I think that sounds like a great idea. I would love for my face to be a trophy.
Yeah, you know, we can do it. Maybe we'll get a little LED. We'll get a crystal. We'll do it fancy. I'm not sure if it'll come with hair product that they can style your hair like a chia pet. There's so many different unique ways we can go. But as we go on to stage two, like we told you at the top of the show, it's all about gambling. And this will be a little bit briefer, at least for today's show, than what we would normally allocate for this part of the program. But I guess the first question I have to ask, do you change anything as a NASCAR bettor as we approach the playoffs? Whether there's certain drivers in your outright portfolio, if there's head-to-head matchups you'll avoid, does the overall philosophical approach waver from what you would do during the 26 regular season races?
Yes. Yes and no, I guess. It's so situational. I think that it's really important that, you know, when it comes to these cutoff races, that you're very aware of the point scenarios and the how competitive the cars are going into the race. So I like to ask myself, like, what sort of playoff scenario could have implications on this matchup? Now, when it comes to outrights, I don't think that it changes things too much. You know, I don't want to speak in absolutes here because I could think of scenarios where, you know, someone might be happy with a second or third place finish, even though they have a race winning car, because this gets them to advance. So, it's to sit here and give a very clear, I guess, I don't know, a very clear description of how it changes would be very, very difficult because there's so many moving parts, that it would be hard to even describe. This could be a whole podcast the more that I think about it. So I don't think
The good thing is we can break this up into pieces and we can cover pieces next week, the following week, and continue to build on it. That's the nice part of having this format where I'm going to have to break it all down today if you got a lot of information you want to share with our listeners.
I had a bunch of notes here and then I just started thinking about it. And at first, I did not think it affected outrights. But you know what? You brought up a good point and earlier in the show about how maybe someone might be happy with just a fifth or sixth place finish. And man, you don't want to have the fastest car and have that be, you know, maybe your biggest investment on the race and, you know, have his crew chief come over the radio and say, hey, just stay here, take care of your stuff and let's move on to next week. Now, I say that and then, you know, you look back at like Jimmy Johnson at the Roval when all he needed to do was finish second place and he gets into the playoffs. And
you had to bring that race up. You had to bring it up. I mean, I thought we were going to wait until we actually had a handicap the Roval for that to come up. And you know what? If you follow Chris on Twitter, maybe he'll tweet it out, the infamous wreck between the 19 or what was he driving, the 78 at that time. I don't even know. Jimmy Johnson and Martin Truex Jr., which still haunts me to this day.
Yeah, and Jimmy Johnson's one of the smartest drivers to ever get behind the wheel, in my opinion. And he went for the win. So, like I said, at the end of the day, these guys are still race car drivers. So, it does factor in a little bit, but I would say more on cutoff races than anything else. So that's where I'll start. And then we'll take a deeper dive on this next week.
You know, one thing that is interesting is obviously price. That's the overarching common thread as sports bettors, specifically in NASCAR. And I think as it relates to Martin Truex, so we'll talk a little bit about in the final portion of the show and how good he's been at Darlington in the past. You see his price reflect a driver that's on the outside looking in. The best he can finish is 17th, but that's also why he's 11-1 this week versus the 7-1 price tag that we saw on him for the race in late May. So just something to think about. You don't want to completely avoid non-playoff drivers, but you may want to make potentially smaller investments knowing that their aptitude or desire, I should say, to race as aggressively down the stretch could play a role. And we've seen that firsthand with how Kyle Larson went about trying to utilize the high line at Homestead over and over and over again when he was a non-playoff driver working in inferior equipment for Chip Ganassi Racing. But stage two, rather brief.
Well, hey, Todd, you know, I guess I do have a super hot take about betting in the playoffs.
No.
So here's my super hot take.
Oh, no. Here we go.
I don't see any reason to bet anybody but the championship four at Phoenix to win the race. There you go. You heard it here first. I think those guys will be the fastest cars. That's for sure. Week in and week out. Unless we're back at Homestead where Larson had a chance.
Well, it's one of those things that I've always wondered. And, you know, hey, look, I know we do this in partnership with NASCAR, so I don't want to speculate. You do wonder if those cars are a little bit different than the rest of the field that's competing in Phoenix in the final race of the season. Well, if memory serves me correct, the last final race winner that didn't win the championship would have been Denny Hamlin at Homestead, correct?
Yeah, well, not since this is like the championship race. I mean, they've pretty much run one through four. I think that Larson is the only guy that's actually bent had like clearly the dominant car, but that was at Homestead. I think at Phoenix, it's very different. There was a Harvick at one point, I think, was breaking up the top four. Here's the deal. All the resources from every team are looking at just one car, and you know what? They run, they're the four fastest cars, and I don't know. That's all I'm going to say.
it reminds me of the old video game, and we're really dating ourselves, so we have younger listeners. They're going to have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. I think it was called Off-Road, where you could pick up those nitro boosters, and you could get your car to drive that much faster than the competition as one of those bonus elements. It almost feels like the cars that are vying for the championship in Phoenix have a little bit more in the tank there. But you know what? That's what this format was designed for. It creates drama throughout the course of the season, as we saw at Daytona. It creates drama every three races in the playoffs, and obviously, you don't want to see the guy that ultimately goes on to win the series championship muddled back in traffic racing for 11th place. So it's a good thing, and I think people will really come to appreciate it, especially those fans that are new to NASCAR and are going to stay glued to the edge of their seat until we know who the 2022 champion is. As we always do, though, before we wrap up stage two, want to share where you can watch all the on-track activities this weekend for NASCAR. And things will kick off at 10:05 Eastern on Saturday. This will be available on the NBC Sports app with Xfinity Practice. That'll roll right into Xfinity Qualifying, which is also available on the NBC Sports app. At 12:05 Eastern, Cup Practice will get underway. That'll start on the NBC Sports app, and once we see English Premier League coverage come to an end, you'll see that coverage move to USA. Cup Qualifying tentatively scheduled for 12:50 Eastern, available on USA. And the final event for Saturday's festivities will be at 3 Eastern, the Sport Clips VFW Help a Hero 200. And keep in mind, for the Xfinity Series, it is not yet the playoffs for them. That'll start a little bit later on. So still drivers trying to work their way into the postseason field there. And then, of course, on Sunday, a traditional time, at least the last couple of years, for the Southern 500. A little bit unusual for those folks given the holiday weekend. But at 6 Eastern, you'll get the Cookout Southern 500, and that'll be available on USA. So spend your quality time with the family early in the day. Fire up the two TV sets. You put NASCAR on there with sound. You'll be able to watch LSU and Florida State side by side and really enjoy what I think is one of the most exciting tracks, or at least lends itself to some of the most exciting racing in the Cup Series. Stage three, it's all about the breakdown, and that's where we'll head for a little throwback weekend for the Southern 500. And if you're looking for a little track breakdown in comps, Darlington will carry a number of nicknames, and you'll hear these thrown around throughout the course of the race weekend. The track Too Tough to Tame, the Lady in Black, and the ultimate drinking game if you're sitting around with friends and family. Chug a beer, take a shot, do whatever you need to every time you hear them mention the Darlington Stripe.
Chug a beer. Holy cow, you'd be dead.
Shotgun a beer. Oh, come on now.
Maybe just take a
sip. It's a holiday weekend.
Oh, that's true. Right. Yeah, you're right. You got Monday off.
Yeah, you got Monday off. You got a chance to digest it all before you got to be back in the office on Tuesday. The Southern 500, now that it's back in its rightful place on the NASCAR calendar, it is considered one of the crown jewels, and the distance here, 100 miles longer than what you see in May. As far as some of the track specs for Darlington, it's a track that comes in just shy of 1.4 miles. It's egg-shaped with different angles as far as your entry into turn one and two versus turn three and four, 25 degree turns in turn one and two, 23 degrees in three and four. And the track configuration, if you believe in storylines, and I haven't been able to verify this, it's different on both ends because of a minnow pond the original landowner didn't want to relocate. So the original track builder said, the hell with it, we're going to do it, we're going to create a unique configuration. Sunday's running distance will be 367 laps. It's one of the highest tire wear tracks we'll see on the schedule, and you're going to have no option but, to quote Larry McReynolds, take four Mr. Feelgoods every time you come onto pit road. I lay all of that out and then ask you the question. We know Fontana is high tire wear, but what are some of the other track comps that you'll use before we get into the individual drivers and how you're approaching the race on Sunday?
Well, I think that obviously Fontana, it's the same right side tire. You know, Kansas, Las Vegas, Charlotte, Darlington, an auto club. So those are the track comps that I'm using. So essentially I have kind of five races that I have, you know, sitting on a spreadsheet here to take a look at, what I think is a great indication of, you know, who's been good on this tire and at these tracks. So, like I said, auto club, Charlotte, Darlington, Kansas, and Las Vegas will be what I use this week.
Oh, it's always a helpful place to start, obviously, as we've talked about at great lengths and we'll continue to say until we're blue in the face. Current form matters a little bit. Track history matters a lot more. And obviously, you look for comps and how some of these machines, specifically with drivers and teams, have performed. And obviously, when it comes to Darlington, we do have one data point from this race earlier the year, but it will come with a caveat. I'll let you lay that out for folks. Joey Logano finished first. Tyler Reddick came in second. And Justin Haley found himself on the podium. I'd obviously be stunned if that was the 1-2-3 this weekend, but I digress completely. When you're talking about drivers that did have race-winning machines, Ross Chastain, Kyle Larson, and Kyle Busch all were fast, but finished outside the top 30. Interesting historical note here as well. The last win for Hendrick Motorsports coming at Darlington was actually Jimmy Johnson, who we've talked about at great lengths, way back in 2012. Chevrolet as a manufacturer, 0-11, their last 11 trips here, but May was one data point. Racing conditions were going to be very different this coming Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it was cold earlier in the season, and you know it's going to be 30 degrees warmer come this week. So I think that we can draw something from Richmond. I mean, we saw the same thing when we visited Richmond the second time. A completely different race just because of track temperature. So, you know, whenever it's cooler, there's going to be more grip in the track. The cars are going to be more similar. But if the elevated temperatures, all of a sudden cars are starting to lose grip. They're getting a little loose and the track feels a little bit slimy. And that's when you really start to see guys feather that throttle and you can see comers and goers throughout the length of the run. So I'm excited to see that. Not that I didn't think that there was a lot of passing in at Darlington in the first race, but I think we'll see even more this race.
And I think that provides the perfect avenue to start breaking down some of the drivers that could be in the mix as far as their betting odds suggest. And we do have a trio of them that are all priced at 6-1. You could shop around. You may be able to find a rogue 7 on some of them. And that group would include Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, and Chase Elliott. The common denominator there, two of them are HMS drivers that would love to break that long losing skid for that proud racing team. So we can start with Kyle Larson, who actually fell two spots in the playoff rankings after his quick exit at Daytona. Engine problems only 14 laps into the race left him with a last place finish. He has failed to finish six races this season, three actually by engine failures, which you don't expect from a racing team that drives such top flight equipment. But when you're talking about Larson at Darlington, he has been the model of consistency up until the race in the spring. Previously, he'd strung together three straight top fives and shown the ability to win in every trip. Even in the spring race here, he led 27% of the laps that he was actually out there running. His current form, if you're looking at recent four or five finishes, skewed a little bit because of those Daytona and Indy results, but you have to believe the five not only going to be relevant here this weekend, Worm, but very much a player in trying to defend his series championship.
Newsflash, Kyle Larson will be good this weekend. I mean, if you just look
short, succinct, and effective. Moving on.
No, I mean, if you look at it, if you watch the race from earlier this year, he went to the rear and he was able to drive up really quickly, passing on both sides, both the bottom and the top. I think that your car, it's a very narrow racetrack. So it's very important that you can work the bottom and the top, because here's the deal. If someone, if someone's trying to keep a position, they're just going to take away the line of the faster driver. And so if you're able to work both the top and the bottom, which Larson was able to do earlier this year, you're able to make passes pretty, pretty quickly. So also, Larson's awesome here. I mean, if you look back to this fall race last year, I know the car is very different, but there's certain things you can take away or a driver can hang on to with certain tracks, and Larson just has this thing figured out. I know he finished second last year to Denny in this race, but he had the most fast laps, and I think that that's really important metric to look at. Also, he led 156 laps. Denny led 146. I mean, it was these two guys and everybody else. So not only was he good at this time of the year last year, but he was also great earlier in the year. The engine thing, I mean, when he spun out, I think like the tires ended. I don't know anything about cars, by the way.
Don't share that with people. Stick to your spreadsheet. Stick to handicapping NASCAR. We're not going to let you put your pretty face underneath a car to fix it anytime soon.
So, from what I understand, the rear wheel started spinning the opposite direction, and that's bad. So, that's what happened. That's why his engine blew. So, it wasn't an issue with the manufacturer. It's more of an issue that is specific to this new car. So, that's all I know about that.
Well, that's all that matters. And obviously the five, you know, would have liked to improve his playoff positioning, but doesn't change what he's capable of accomplishing going forward.
The one thing I want to add about Larson, I think that the biggest knock on this team this year is they haven't adjusted the car very well. They're usually really good early in the race, and they just, if they lose a little bit of track position, I think that they're having a hard time staying ahead of the track changes. So I think if there's one downside to the five is that they just haven't adjusted very well. Whereas you've seen other teams, Gibbs in particular, adjust very well, and I think the nine team as well adjusts a little bit better than the five. So that'll be interesting to see if that team can stay ahead of the track this year and keep Larson out front.
Well, you mentioned Denny Hamlin and Chase Elliott. We can get to Chase in a moment, but Denny Hamlin also in that bucket of drivers, priced pretty much at 6-1 across the board. 8 top 10 finishes in his last 11 trips to the Lady in Black, and includes 7 that have resulted in top 5 finishes. He's a 4-time Darlington winner and has 3 runner-ups here as well. He's one of the best in the entire series on the long run when it comes to protecting his equipment. Key is avoiding a lot of those tire movements that obviously leads to advanced degradation, and so much of it, we're going to see tire fall off of 2 to 2.5 seconds. It's being able to sustain that speed. And the 11 probably does it better than anybody else. As far as his current form, a pair of top fives have come in his last 4 races overall.
Well, Denny's the fastest car week in and week out. So, you know, and by the way, he's really good at this track. I think when he opened at like this 10-1, I didn't plan on that hanging around very long. And I think he's finding him, you know, he's in the 6-7-1 range, which I think is pretty fair. Kind of a bummer he's not going to be able to race in the Xfinity race. He's got some neck, back, and hip problems. So I don't think they're problems, but just a little bit sore. And remember, this is a long, hot weekend for these guys. It's a long race. I don't blame Denny for just bowing out. It's not like the track has changed too much where he's, you know, he's missing seat time and that could cost him. So, you know, they have speed in their car. You know, they just have to avoid mistakes. I mean, he could have won 3 or 4 more races this year on speed, but they tend to make these mistakes. So I would say he's the exact antithesis of a guy like Chase Elliott, who we haven't seen a ton of speed from, but we have seen get those finishes. So I think that's a great segue for you.
Yeah, I was obviously counting too on Denny driving around in the black and red Sport Clips car on Saturday, or driving the neon green or teal Hisense car that we've made at plenty of money and betting him in the Xfinity races in the past. But yes, perfect segue, Worm. You're getting to be quite the co-host around these parts. And when you look at Chase Elliott, his last 7 trips to Darlington, just a pair of top fives. If we go all the way back to Gateway, however, over the span of 11 races, just 3 finishes outside of the top 10. And to your point, the 9 may not unload every single race with the fastest car, but you can bet your bottom dollar by the time stage 3 rolls around, the 9 is very much in contention and will clearly be a force to be reckoned with, not just on Sunday, but in the playoffs, where he's less than 3-1 to win the championship.
Yeah, this is a big race. I think, I know, newsflash, hey, also, this first race is a big race this year. But
thanks, Captain Obvious. This is why you get paid the big bucks around these parts.
Thank you. Here's why. You're going to see, I consider this kind of a mile and a half track. And you're going to see this track, a similar track to this, and the same tire used at Darlington, Kansas, Texas, Las Vegas, and I'm guessing Miami. So that's, what is that, 5 races where you're going to see similar setups? Man, this, if you go out here and dominate this week, your chances of making it to the finals, I think, are pretty good, because you're going to see this almost every other, or you're going to see this exactly every other race. So this is a big race. And here's the thing. Chase is okay at this track, but man, that the way that that team's operating and the adjustments that they make, I mean, he's going to be there unless he has issues. I certainly plan on Chase to have, he's the guy that's going to get that 5th or 6th place finish, you know, maybe have an 8th place car, but maybe finish 2 or 3 spots better than he should, because that's what he's done all damn year.
And when you're looking at some of the head-to-head matchups, at least pre-week, Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, all basically a pick'em in a round-robin manner against each other, and that's why those 3 are considered the favorites. As far as your shifting gears, looking at some of the value propositions, we talked about Joey Logano and his impressive run here to win the spring race. Logano finds himself a low of 9-1 out there, but if you shop around, I have seen some 11s. Had a damn good car here in the spring, and obviously took that to victory lane. He led 107 of the 293 laps. snaps, produced 30 fastest laps out in front of the field, second place average running position in the race. And when you look at where he is as far as driver averages, he's got the second best average finish at Darlington here, right behind Kevin Harvick, but he only has two top fives and four top tens. The thing is, he hasn't had a very bad race where he finishes outside the top 20. When you're looking at the 22, he's quietly putting together a good run and has a legitimate claim to be made that he's as well-rounded as any driver who has eyes on their prize for winning the championship.
Oh, yeah. Joey Logano's in good form right now. I have a hard time giving him too much credit for that win. Remember how important the first pit stall is here. So he won the pole in the spring, and that first pit stall is just the gift that keeps on giving. Every time you're on pit road, you're able to pick up spots. And Joey Logano was just kind of riding around the top four all afternoon. And then, you know, we're looking at, you know, Larson, Ross, and Kyle Busch, or Ross Chastain, Kyle Larson, and Kyle Busch were out of the race at this point. And so he was able to... you know, drive up to the bumper of the 24 and get underneath him and make a clear pass. Oh, wait, no. He just drove right through him. He literally just forgot to hit the brakes or forgot to let off the gas and just drove right through William Byron. He said, no, I don't want to pass him. I'm just going to punt him. So I do think Logano is going to be, you know, kind of a factor. If you look at those five tracks or five races that I'm looking at, where it's the early Darlington, Kansas, Vegas, Fontana, and what's the other one?
Charlotte.
Yep. Thank you, Todd. I will
say
this.
That's what I'm here for.
I will say this.
That's why I get paid the small bucks.
The medium bucks. Yep.
Yep.
I will say this. He doesn't, with the exception of obviously pulling it, he doesn't qualify super well at these tracks, but he does have the best average running position. And I think that that's kind of an important thing to take note of, that he's kind of solidly, you know, in the top 10 there when it comes to his average running position. He might not get the finishes, but if you're running solidly in the top 10 all day, that's a pretty good ride for Logano, I think, with just kind of the speed that he's had in his car. So it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of turn it up a notch and start to be a top three car week in and week out.
If we're talking about other drivers in the Ford camp, Kevin Harvick, who we've mentioned, you know, has been the model of consistency all season long. This is one of his best tracks as well. He wasn't exactly the best when it came to qualifying. He rolled off the grid deep in the field, I believe 35th in the spring, but still found a way to race himself into contention. When you look at the four, the last seven races at Darlington, hey, look, the numbers speak for themselves. Two wins, six top fives, and seven top tens. His laps led don't blow anybody away, and he's got a driver rating behind just Martin Truex Jr. and Kyle Larson. But when you're talking about average finish among some of the tracks you mentioned, quietly the four has actually accumulated the best average finish of that five subset. 12 consecutive races at Darlington inside the top 10, 10 top fives. I mean, I can go on and on in terms of what he's able to do, but I think the one thing that really blew me away, Kevin Harvick led 63 total laps here as a member of RCR. He's already led 730 laps in 14 starts here with Stuart Haas Racing. We know the four is going to be a factor. Were you surprised that his number opened where it did, widely available in that 18 to 20 range?
Yes, I was. He's not getting any respect. However, I can already tell you what the four's weekend is going to look like. It's going to be the same weekend we've seen all year. He's going to look average in practice. Him and Rodney are going to have just their normal back and forth. The car feels all right. He's going to qualify 12th to 18th. Then he's going to get on an interview before the race and say, I really don't know what to expect from this car today. Pretty average in practice. And then I expect him to have a chance to win. That's how it's gone week in and week out for this team. And they just keep getting better. And I'll tell you what, even when, you know, maybe in the first stage, they might be struggling, you know, maybe rolling around in 15th to 20th place. They don't panic. Childers does a great job of staying ahead of the track and when it comes to his adjustments. And Harvick does a good job of just being patient, learn a little bit about the car and the track. And I fully expect him to be there with a chance to win at the end of this race.
And we are going to see the track temperature change as well. I mean, this race will start, albeit in the twilight, not in the heat of the day at 6 o'clock Eastern, but at night when the track cools down. We've already seen a blueprint for a race that the four was able to start, was miserable in stage one, got better in stage two, and his car performed at its absolute best at Richmond. So let that be a blueprint and a lesson for anybody that writes the four off for dead if he's not out there racing in the top 10 early on. No doubt will be a player in this thing. We'll see if he's got a chance to contend for the outright win. Christopher Bell, one of your favorite drivers, priced at right around 20-1. We'll call that more or less the market consensus. He's run well at high tire wear tracks and intermediate distances. When you look at his current form, 4 of 7 races, he's finished inside the top 10 lately. Michigan and Daytona have helped bring down his average overall finish ranking, but you talked about the 20 being probably one of the best value propositions in terms of winning the actual championship. What do you think the outlook looks like for him as we go to the Lady in Black this weekend?
Well, to speak about the championship, apparently Caesars didn't respect what I said because he went from 15-1 to 22-1. So I added. Anyway, and that's just to win the championship out of spite. That's the spite ad, which comes with probably a little bit of ego.
Well, you know what was interesting, though? I will talk about his odds because we actually discussed it and we gave it out as a best bet and figured it was a great way for people to diversify their portfolio a little bit. When Kurt Busch ends up basically saying, hey, look, I'm not going to be able to participate in the playoffs, meaning Martin Truex Jr. was in if the season ended before Daytona, you saw Truex odds come crashing down. And as a result, books that do things the right way drifted Christopher Bell's odds out. And that may have been the reason why that was the case.
Well, that makes me feel a little better, Todd, but the line movement went against me, and I always hate that. You know, I like to make sure that I'm giving everybody the best price, and that's...
just keep plowing... Well, so, okay, you're going to tell our listeners then to just keep plowing into a number if they happen to have prices at 18-1 or better now?
Nope, you're right about it. Yeah, just keep betting it until they move the number. That's my thought process here. Listen, Bell hasn't had the finishes here at Darlington that you would expect at a track where the high line comes in and these dirt trackers that like the cars loose can kind of feather that throttle and use the cushion up against the wall there to generate speed. But he's raced well. He even had a quote today that he posted that he said, I know that I haven't had the finishes, but you know, I actually do race a lot better here than, you know, my results show. Here's the deal with Bell. I mean, when you look at those five races that we're using, he has the best average starting position. So right then and there at 20-1, it seems like he has the best value from an outright perspective. Just if he's going to qualify in the top, you know, I think he's got two poles, right? So two out of the five races, he's put it right on the pole. So obviously you can steal some value there at 20-1, in my opinion. Now, remember, you're kind of playing with fire with Chris Bell because he will be going to the rear at some point in the race. 500-mile race, maybe two or three times, but he has definitely exhibited the ability to drive back through the field. And there's something about starting in the rear at some point in the race and driving back up to the leaders. I think these guys are able to learn so much on how to make passes. You know, when you look at Loudon, when he won, it was Harvick and Truex and nobody else until those guys got shuffled back in traffic. They struggled to make passes. You know who didn't? Someone that went to the rear at least one time in Chris Bell. And he was able to pull out a win there at a high wear track. And I think that there's something about just this, you know, making a ton of passes that really becomes an advantage late in the race. So I think Chris Bell has a ton of value, like I said, for two reasons. He has tremendous upside and he learns a ton throughout the race. And then also he qualifies well. So I think you'll see his odds move the most if he does kind of get that top three or four starting spot.
Maybe you figured out why Kevin Harvick does so well. He qualifies like crap. He has to start far back, and he's got to figure out what kind of machine he has to pull to the front. I wouldn't recommend that as a strategy week in, week out, because you would prefer better pit stall selection. But hey, look, maybe there's some merits trying to figure out how your car handles in traffic, since we know these things are awfully quick when you do get to clean air, and you have to make adjustments accordingly. One driver that we talked about early on in the show who's not in the playoffs, but I think is definitely worth mentioning, would be Martin Truex Jr. 7-1 in the spring. His odds, while he available at 11-1 for this race. He's been outstanding at Darlington in the past. In 4 out of the 5 trips, he's run consistently inside the top 10 and had cars good enough for a podium finish every single time we come here. Top 5 in both races last year. Ran extremely well here in the spring before he wrecked out earlier in the race that he would have liked. When you look at his price at 11, does it offer a value proposition or is it a wait and see approach? I know the 19 is a consummate professional, but you do have to wonder if there's a little bit of a hangover and disappointment that he's just playing out the stretch over the next 10 weeks.
You know, we talked about this last night and you brought up, you know, hey, what do you think of the 19 this week? And I was trying to come up with like a good explanation either way, whether I thought he'd be good or bad. And I just couldn't. I think this is a true coin toss. I have no idea what to think. You know, he has to be bummed he's not in the playoffs. I mean, I never would have thought that he wasn't going to be there, you know, especially because he had speed in his car. You know, it's not like he didn't have chances to win. He certainly did. So, I wouldn't be shocked if he went out there and, you know, qualified in the top 3 and led a ton of laps like he has in the past. Or I wouldn't be shocked if he just goes out there kind of like Eeyore and rolls around in 10th or 12th and, oh, woe is me, and kind of gives. I just don't know. I mean, when was the last time that Truex wasn't in the chase? I don't know how he's going to react at all. So I think at this point, it would be pure speculation to say one way or the other. And I'm not in that. I'm not interested in speculating it at all. So I'm just going to wait and see.
I mean, the speculation business does nothing but bankrupts you as a sports bettor. So I would agree. You can err on the side of caution. You can avoid him in head-to-head matchups. And should you think that he has a race-winning car, there's always the avenue to take advantage in live betting. But you've got me thinking, Worm, you kind of jogged a thought process. I almost feel like as NASCAR betting continues to grow and proliferate with a lot of the sports books, those that are partners with NASCAR and otherwise, I feel we should get yes-no prices on drivers coming into the season. Because a no price on Martin Truex before the season started, I mean, you would have been able to take a price up upwards of 10, 12, even higher than that if you thought that the 19 wasn't going to be one of the 16 cars that had a chance once we got to the Southern 500 to actually win the championship.
Yeah, I think Steve Letarte was onto this early on. He said, I think that Truex with the old shifting definitely had an advantage, and you know he loses a little bit of that advantage with this car. So I thought he was nuts for saying it. And so Letarte, I'm sure you're a big fan of the show and listen every week. Got to give you some props there, because I did hear it from you first and I didn't believe it. And you would have cashed a nice little ticket if there was a no prop on Truex making the playoffs.
Yeah, awfully interesting to think about it, but clearly this is a playoff format that we've talked about at great lengths every single week. It lends itself to drama. You win and you get in, and there isn't really an avenue for a lot of drivers to point themselves in. Ryan Blaney, of course, the only one that was able to do so during the regular season. Obviously, so many other drivers, extremely talented. We can't hit on every single playoff driver that's going to have a chance to win at Darlington or put together a good finish and create some of that momentum before we go on. But as far as the best of the rest, Worm, whether it's Tyler Reddick, whether it's Kyle Busch, Ross Chastain, are there other drivers that you feel are worth mentioning that the loyal Stay Green listeners should be accounting for in their handicap?
No, I think we just touch on those three, and I'll do it here briefly. Listen, Tyler Reddick is good at high wear tracks where that high line comes in, but he does need a very specific set of circumstances to move up through the field.
He's a man with a very specific set of skills.
Yeah, if that high line starts ripping and people let him pass on that high side, well, look out, because he seems to be a rhythm driver. All of a sudden, he can start ripping off some of the fastest laps on the track in 10th or 12th place that even the leaders are trying to, you know, figure out what line he's running, and usually it's right up against the wall. If you make him move off the wall and pass on the inside, I think he'll struggle a little bit. Now, he could just have a rocket and go out there and lead a ton of laps, but usually when he has to work his way through the field, he needs that high line, and he can't move far from it to make those passes. So I think Tyler Reddick does have some upside, but you know, like I said, it needs to be a very specific set of circumstances for that to happen. Now, when it comes to the 18 and Kyle Busch,
who, by the way, has been a much more affable fellow over the last, you know, 7 to 10 days with media obligations. Either he's come to peace with not returning to JGR, or he knows something that the rest of the NASCAR community has not yet been privy to.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's like on my notes, it says, does he even care? Like, I don't know.
I think that's, you know what? I think that's a legitimately fair question, given what we've seen from the 18 and some of the body language that he's displayed.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know. I don't understand him. Like I said, I've made more money on Kyle Busch than I have any other driver in NASCAR. And so he always kind of has a special place in my heart. But this is like a weird funk that he's in, and him being nice to the media, I'm not sure where his head is at. Obviously, Kyle Busch can go out and win at any track. I just haven't seen... I've seen a lot more quit in him this year, and I don't know. I'm not rushing to back him at this point in the week. I just don't know where his head's at.
And I think it's a pretty fair assessment, honestly, because we know the 18 has oodles of potential. We know he'll have a race-winning machine most likely under him. But does he have the patience? Will they be able to make the adjustments to put him in a position to punch his ticket to the next round? And last but not least, a driver that I thought was worth bringing up that you mentioned as well, Ross Chastain. He showed a ton of speed early on in the season, kind of took the entire NASCAR community and bettors by storm. I mean, this was a driver 75-1 in some places to win. That number, of course, no longer even close to available, 10-1 more or less the consensus. We've seen his odds drift around for Darlington. You could have had 15-1 early in the week. We'll call 10-1 the consensus for this race. But he's now put together six straight finishes of 18th or worse. Finished 30th here last time because he ran just 194 laps, but he did finish with the third best driver rating. Is this just bad luck? Is this the pressure getting ratcheted up? How do you begin to assess the one and his opportunity not only this weekend at Darlington, but maybe in the whole big picture?
Well, I'm not gonna speculate on what's going on. I'm gonna say that anything after May 29th, which was the Coke 600, I don't think is as important as people make it out to be. Yes, you obviously want to show speed in your race car, but he's done that. He's shown that he has speed. I know that he might not have all the momentum in the world, but if you go up, you know, leading up to that Coke 600 and at the Coke 600, he was arguably the fastest car week in and week out. But then you have a whole load of races: Worldwide Technology, Sonoma, Nashville, Road America, Atlanta, New Hampshire, Pocono, Indianapolis, Michigan, Richmond, Watkins Glen, and Daytona. Those tracks don't mean anything. And so I think that they have to just say, hey, we struggled at some of these tracks, but you know what? We have that behind us. We have the wins that we need. And now we're coming into our bread and butter. And I think that when they hung that 15, I knew that wasn't going to last very long. So I expect him to be good. A standard Ross type weekend. He will run four or five laps, three or four different segments in practice. He'll just be looking for balance. He'll look average. He'll qualify 8th to 12th place. And then he's going to go out there and be the first guy passing cars. Where I think he's going to struggle is we've been saying, just wait for the playoffs. He has something coming. Well, here we are. We are in the playoffs. And I expect every single person that he tries to pass to race him like Ryan Newman raced guys when he was a lap down. And I think that it's going to be hard for him. They're never going to give him a decent line. And I think this is where you might see some guys really, really take it to the edge with how they race Ross Chastain, because the stakes are high at this point.
Let's hope Martin Truex Jr. and Ross Chastain have buried the hatchet, because the 19 can definitely wreak havoc on any postseason aspirations. And you mentioned how well the one ran earlier in the year. There was a stretch from Las Vegas, the third race of the season, to New Hampshire, which was the 20th. So 18 races by my monkey math, where his average finish was a little better than 9th, and it blew away everybody on the circuit. But that's all a distant memory. You got into the playoffs. You have to be in it to win it. And we'll see exactly what Trackhouse can do, not only with the one, but also the 99 of Daniel Suarez as well. Want to encourage all of you, our loyal Stay Green listenership. Follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. And Worm, we've waved the green white checker flag on stage 3, but as always, we have to go to Victory Lane and want to know where you've identified a pre-week investment that we can build our portfolio headed into the Sunday Best Bet, which as always we'll share on the podcast website.
Okay, well, Todd, I'm going to leave this up to you, as you can choose which bet you would like. I have two outrights that I like. I have one matchup that I like. And I have one top 10 that I like. Which would you like me to give?
This is like, you know, trying to play let's make a deal. What's behind door number one? What's behind door number two? Matchup we'll hold off on because we offer up a matchup on Sunday and encourage all of the listeners that are there. Hey, it's a great way. When we send it out, you got about 30 seconds to 2 minutes to move on those things. They've been absolutely flying across the board. We know a lot of listeners have had trouble trying to have access to some of those. We apologize, but we know the NASCAR markets are a little bit different. Hey, the outright markets I love as much as anybody else, but I feel they can be a little bit volatile. So you know what? Let's meet in the middle and let's go with a top 10 price that you found extremely advantageous, or as the kids in the industry like to say, plus EV.
Well, I think you have to go with Chris Bell to finish in the top 10 at minus 120. This kid, I think, could have a, dare I say, a Stewart-like chase where he went out and rattled like five or six wins. You know, I think maybe I'm a little biased towards this Chris Bell kid, but...
Shocking.
I know.
Shocking you're biased towards the 20. I never would have seen that coming.
I know, right? Anyone could have... anyone that knows me would be like, oh, so what Bell bet are we going to take? But I think this kid has a ton of talent, and I think that... if he can keep the mistakes to a minimum, he could win two or three races in this chase. And this is going to be a great track for him. I expect him to qualify well, stay up front. And even if he does go to the rear, there's enough, you know, hopefully he does it early enough in the race to where he's able to work his way back up through the field. So Chris Bell, minus 120, top 10 is my pick this week.
I like it. Let's make it happen. Any other words of wisdom, life advice you'd like to share as we head into a holiday weekend before we bid our Stay Green listeners a fond farewell?
Oh, man, I'm just excited for the playoffs, man. This is awesome. These tracks are great for us from a predictability perspective. Darlington, Kansas, and then we go to Bristol. I think that those are great tracks from a betting perspective, and I'm looking forward to just seeing how things unravel. This is exciting.
It should be a whole lot of fun. Whether you're a sports bettor or a casual NASCAR observer, the playoffs are what we all live for. 10 great races from now until early November before we'll find out who gets crowned the 2022 series champion. So for Chris Wormy, I'm Todd Furman. Wish all of you a best of luck as you continue to build out your race cards. And with a Christopher Bell top 10 ticket at hand come Sunday afternoon, early evening, depending on which coast you're on, hopefully we'll see you at the window.